call to order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Wednesday, February the 19th. We're doing public hearings today on House Bill 5054, which is the budget for the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and House Bill 5055, which is a fee bill for the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. Before I open the public hearing, are there any housekeeping things that we need to know?
Madam Chair, not that I'm aware of.
Good. We'll open the public hearing on these two bills, and I'll ask Ms. McGlashan from the Legislative Fiscal Office to go over her summary.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, you've got quite a number of handouts in front of you. Would you like me to kind of orient you to what's in front of you? Okay. Hopefully on top you have the handout from LFO, which is a stapled group of papers with a LFO memo head on the cover or on the top, and I'll go over those in a few minutes. I actually got these distributed to your offices yesterday, but in case you weren't able to bring your copies with you, I provided you with an additional set. And then, depending on your particular pile, then you'll see, let me just orient you then to TSPC's handouts. There's the binder, the budget binder for the governor's recommended budget, and this is the one that has a lot of detail in it. They won't be referring to this very often because there's a separate handout for their presentation, but a lot of times when there are questions from subcommittee members, we use this to get the answer for you. Then there's a bound presentation from Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. It has a blue back to it. And this is the presentation that they've put together using the guidelines that were issued to all agencies for presentation format. They also have a couple of handouts, one called Focus on Teacher Education, and I'm sure that they'll be discussing that in more detail, and another one on Quality Teachers, Oregon Report on 1999-2000 Teacher Preparation, and again, I'm sure they'll be discussing that in their presentation. And then you have a handout from Budget and Management on the Governor's Recommended Budget, and after I finish up my orientation and TSPC does its presentation, then Dan will go through this for you. And as you mentioned, Madam Chair, we're also doing House Bill 5055, and the agency has prepared some information to present on that bill as well. And I think that covers everything in front of you. So if you'll turn back to my handout, I'll just go through those eight items that are to be covered in LFO's orientation. I've attached to the memo a couple of handouts. One is just some printed slides that just kind of give you a snapshot of the agency. And on the first page, you can see I've listed what the agency does. And basically, it establishes rules for licensure and registration and issues licenses and registrations to teachers, administrators, school nurses, and other education personnel. It maintains and enforces professional standards for and proper assignment of licensed and registered educators. And it also adopts standards for and approves teacher education programs. And then if you flip to the back of that page, you'll see, excuse me, there's a pie chart there that basically what that's trying to show you is that this budget is supported entirely by other funds. And it gives you the amount that's in the governor's budget as well as the number of FTE. And then I've also listed some budget drivers for you, and those will be discussed in more detail when we get into the discussion of the agency's budget. And then there's the more detailed analysis prepared by our office. And I won't go over that in a lot of detail unless you have some questions on that. And then finally, I've attached just a list of the main additions and some subtractions, actually, in the governor's budget for this agency. And it's kind of repetitive because in the governor's budget section in the more detailed analysis, I've also listed those out, but I understand that you've been getting this list in this committee. If you'll turn your attention back to the memo, item number 3, budget notes from the 2001 session, I've indicated that there were none for this agency, but I do want to bring your attention to the fact that there were these statements of expectation that were developed in some subcommittees from last session, last regular session. And the education subcommittee from last regular session had several statements of expectation that it had for this agency, and it's in the budget report from the 2001 session. And the agency will discuss these in a little more detail, because one has to do with performance measures, one has to do with customer service, and another one has to do with attorney general costs. But I'll just point out to you in the agency's presentation document, this one right here with the blue bat, on pages 11 and 12 in the first tab, with I think we all have a red tab for presentation. On pages 11 and 12 of that section, it talks about how it's addressed those statements of expectation. Number 4 is audit reports, and I've just referred you to the special report section in the budget binder, the more detailed one that has the green cover. There was an audit report by the Secretary of State during the interim. And basically, there was a call to their fraud, waste, and abuse hotline at the audits division within the Secretary of State. And there were some concerns about payments not being properly deposited, some concerns over cash controls, and then the application of certain labor laws. And just in brief, what the audits division found is that there was no evidence to support the allegation that the payments received had not been deposited. They did find some cash controls that could need improvement, and then also that the commission hadn't complied with certain labor laws and regulations, and so the audits division made some recommendations in that regard, and the agency generally agreed with all the recommendations. And it in this section also lists the action that the agency has taken in response to the audit. Back to the memo, number 5, interim reports and studies. There were none by LFO. Number 6, fee adjustments. As you mentioned, Madam Chair, we're also considering House Bill 5055, and that's a bill that would have the legislature provide ratification of a fee increase, which the agency has already implemented last month in January of 2003, and that increases the fee for in-state licenses and renewals from $60 to $75. Number 7, significant policy or oversight issues considered by the emergency board and or interim committees. There were none. And number 8, relevant issues, trends, or special challenges. I would just refer you to the budget drivers for the agency in terms of that item. So that wraps up my orientation for the subcommittee, and I'd like to turn it over to the agency to do its presentation unless you have any questions.
Committee members, any questions or comments for Ms. McGlashan on the LFO oversight or overview? Not now. No. Then I will turn it over to Ms. Evenson Bradley and Ms. Chamberlain and Ms. Ames to take it away.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Vicki Chamberlain, the Executive Director of Teacher Standards and Practices, and on my left is the Chair of the Commission, Pat Evenson Brady, who's the Superintendent of the Region 9 ESD. Her term as chair began in January. She's going to help us with the presentation. And behind me is Larry Warren, our office manager, who manages our budget. I was hired in June, and if you had any questions that predated that, he's here to help me, so to let you know who that is.
Madam
so.
Chair, could I have her bring her microphone closer?
Could you speak?
Sure.
Thank you kindly.
Thank you. No problem. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thanks. So I'm going to turn it over to Chair Evenson Brady to start us out on the overview, and then we'll continue through our budget.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. I just have to tell you, it's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me and giving me a chance to talk about Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I've been excited to be a part of the commission. And
for the record, could you identify yourself?
Pat Evenson-Brady, and I'm the superintendent of Region 9 Education Service District, located in the Dalles, serving Wasco and Hood River counties, and the chair for this year, 03, of Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. What I'd like to do is share with you some information about Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, why the agency exists, our mission, and some of the work that we do. The mission of TSPC is one that...
Excuse me, I'm going to interrupt here. In the presentation packet in the back is a copy of the slides. If you wanted to take notes, I apologize. It's very near the end.
Would be in your blue tab at the end of your booklet. The mission of TSPC is to ensure that every student is taught by caring, competent, and ethical educators. That is a mission established by the commission because there's no statutory mission for the commission. Our vision is that TSPC will lead the nation in setting and maintaining high standards for educators. This goes along with the mission of the Oregon Department of Education and relentless pursuit of educational excellence for every student. The companion piece to that is setting and maintaining high standards for our educators, just as we set and maintain high standards for our students. So what is TSPC? We were the first licensure board, teacher educator licensure board of the nation in 1965. And the TSPC began to work then to become an independent licensure board following the model of other professional boards who license and discipline their own members. In 1973, we became the second independent licensure board in the United States. California beat us out. Currently, 14 states have independent licensure boards, and they're listed for you. Our neighbor to the north, Washington, has a licensure board under development. That's an interesting item in itself, that they have had a non-independent licensure board, and they're now moving in that way. The commission is made up of 17 members who are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. And they represent not only the professional folks whom TSPC controls licensure, preparation, and discipline for, but also the very important public voice. So there are 4 elementary teachers, 4 junior or senior high school teachers, 1 elementary administrator, 1 senior high administrator, a school superintendent, an ESD superintendent, that's my role, my appointment to TSPC, a faculty member from a state teacher education program, a faculty member from a private educator prep program, a school board member, and 2 members of the general public. One of the members must have special education expertise. I might be that person at this point, having managed special education. It's interesting to me the geographical diversity of the commission members. We cover Beaverton to Klamath Falls, Coos Bay to LeGrand, and a number is, and we represent different sized educational agencies and different areas of the state.
What is the term that people sign on for when they become a member?
It's a 4-year term.
And do you have a reappointment? You're allowed how many reappointments?
Madam Chair, for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, they're allowed 1 reappointment.
So where are you at in terms of vacant positions and filling positions and that kind of thing?
Again, Vicki Chamberlain, we have the board is full. There are no vacancies. We recently had a vacancy right before Governor Kulongoski came on, but that was filled by Governor Kitzhaber. So most of our board members are fairly new in their first term.
Wow. So you have no one that's ready to walk out the door?
We have 2 whose terms end at the end of this year. And those two are actually our veterans, and we'll have two vacancies then.
So they are not possible to reappoint?
At this time?
No, when their terms are up at the end of the year,
correct,
they won't be eligible to be reappointed.
Correct.
Can you describe for us the process that you go through to find people that are fits for the positions?
Yes, I can describe to you. Two positions have been filled since I came on in June. And it is what happened under Governor Kitzhaber's administration, at least for those two positions, if somebody had already made an application and expressed an interest in TSPC, other than consulting us if they were an educator about whether or not they had had a sanction, the governor's office had very little contact with us, a little bit of contact. Actually, the last board member, I did attempt to do a recruitment and had been told the governor's office had already filled it. So we're hoping to work that out a little differently with Governor Kulongoski. That's how the two that happened since I came on board happened.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed.
Question.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative.
How are your board members paid?
We are not.
And do they get a per diem?
We have expenses paid when we attend meetings or work on TSPC business.
And how many times a year is that?
The commission meets either five or six times a year,
mm-hmm,
for 2 days at a time. If we do hearings or other activities, that tends to add a day or two to the workload.
And I assume that your board is made up of people throughout the state, and some would have to travel distances. Depending on where your meetings are, your meeting locations are different spots at different places throughout the state.
We've met in Salem for the last, for the time that I've been on the commission. We're looking at moving some of the meetings to Portland.
Uh-huh.
We do typically one off-site meeting.
Uh-huh. So you would typically pay for their transportation and lodging expenses for the day?
Correct.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I clarify more information? Vicki Chamberlain. The statute for TSPC is really clear on expenses. The per diem that the commissioners get is the same per diem that's given for all state expenses. And what's in there that Chair Evenson Brady didn't mention is that the statute also says that the commission is to reimburse the school districts for their substitute pay for the teacher members to serve time on the commission. So for those folks, we pay 2 days substitutes and out of our budget. And actually, as part of our budget, we show you what it's 3% of our budget, our commission meetings. The commission this year did move to reduce the number of their meetings. Last year and previous years, they'd met six times, and this year we're meeting five times to see if that works to help save costs.
It may be interesting for the members of the committee to get copies of, say, the last year's agendas so that we can see what it takes you 2 days to go through five or six times a year.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I can easily do that. We keep our agendas online, and all the supporting materials for our agendas are online for the past year, and you can get that through the publications link on our webpage. I'm hoping as we get through this presentation, you'll understand the work of the business and the work of the commission.
Further questions? Please proceed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pat Evenson Brady. I would like to emphasize for the committee the public role. This seems to me to be an almost ideal mix of a representation of the public through the school board and the two public members, as well as the professional educators at all different levels. Seems like an excellent way to govern and create high standards for Oregon educators and to do the necessary discipline work to assure that those high standards are met. I have appreciated the chance to hear the different points of view that are represented on the commission. The commission has basically three statutory areas. The first is licensure. We do provide licenses for the groups of folks who are listed in that first bulleted point.
Question. Representative Smith. Mm-hmm. School nurses. Are school nurses certified teachers?
They are not.
Okay. And I noticed on your other duties in the beginning, do you license the entire nursing profession? Okay. You just license the nurses that come into your schools?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, these are for situations where the school districts have hired school nurses to run health clinics for children or do health services for children, and they have to be licensed nurses and licensed for the education portion of that.
Well, so I'm a little fuzzy on how you handle the licensure for nurses, because I would not think that would be your area of expertise within the scope of your teacher. How is it that you're able to maintain the standards that a school nurse would need?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Vicki Chamberlain, if you'll permit me, I will bring back to you the standards for the school nurses. We don't license their nursing function.
Okay.
We don't determine the quality of their nursing abilities. That's handled on the nursing board. This would have to do with any education-related type activities they might doing, like, for example, if they were participating in health, wellness, or those types of activities. It would not. We don't have the expertise to license their nursing capabilities.
Thank you. That's what I was getting at. So those nurses would actually be dual licensed from the nursing aspect and then also from your board. Could you bring me also, while you're doing that, a list of the items? Or, you know, I'm not thinking well today. The list of all the things that they would counsel students on. And how many school nurses are left in schools across the state? Because I know there's been budget reductions, and usually a school nurse is one of the first to go.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I will bring you the standards that we license them under in terms of the education standards, and we will... I know easily be able to pull up the data for the number of school nurses left. You are correct. There are not many.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Representative Smith, if I could attempt to clarify here, what are you trying to get at? Where are you going with this?
Well, I want to know if they're counseling on what kind of counseling items they're doing within schools. School-based health clinics often will give counseling in areas that parents do not think they have any business counseling on such.
Okay, with that thought in mind, talk to us then about the scope of what you're licensing for when you talk about the non-health related issues. Are you actually, the question is, are you down at the level of discussion when you're talking about licensing that deals with actual policy areas that these people are going to be discussing in the schools?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I truthfully cannot answer that question for you. There have been no school nurses licensed since I came on in June, and so there hasn't been a circumstance where I've had an opportunity to look at that file. But I do have the standards, and I didn't bring them with me, and I apologize for that.
That's
and
okay. You couldn't have known that I was going to ask the question.
So, and the failure on my part is just my inexperience in covering every single area on the licensure areas. But I know I'll be able to answer that question more clearly when I bring the standards.
Representative Morgan, Representative Smith, we have these folks on the schedule tomorrow.
Great.
So if it's possible to have that information brought forward tomorrow, that would be very helpful.
We can do that.
Please proceed.
Pat, Evenson Brady. I wanted to remind the committee that in Oregon statutes, we use the word teacher to include not only the folks who teach.
Representative Bates has.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, and sorry to interrupt you, but I think we're going to have another question tomorrow that several questions tomorrow that need to be know about ahead of time may save you some problems. School-based health centers, do they come under your jurisdiction, or are they separate from your jurisdiction? You license school-based health centers or the people working inside the school-based health centers? That's a question you may have to come up with tomorrow. Also, I think what we're driving at here is, do you prescribe what school nurses, in the classic sense, can and cannot discuss in the when a individual student comes and talks to them one-on-one, as well as what they can or cannot teach the group setting. Many of their activities are not just checking up on kids and medications being handled at school and things of that nature. Other activities are educational in nature, and that's what sets them apart from other nursing situations. And I think that what's being asked of you is, do you have jurisdiction over that? And if you do, do you prescribe certain discussions? And that's very emotional and moral situation, which we're going to probably have some questions on tomorrow. Okay?
Thank you, Representative Bates. That was a very articulate recap of the discussion
yes.
that I just had. Please proceed.
Thank you. Pat Evenson-Brady. I wanted to remind the committee that we use the word teacher to encompass several of these categories, and not just the folks who actually teach in the classroom. So when we talk about teacher education or teacher preparation or teacher licensure, we're including administrators, school counselors, and school psychologists in that. So if it's not clear as we speak to you exactly about whom we are speaking, please ask us to clarify that. But under Oregon statute, administrators such as myself are often part of the whole group of teachers. Our second broad area is the discipline area, and I've had the pleasure of serving on, maybe the dubious pleasure of serving on the discipline committee for TSPC for the past 2 years. We set and maintain standards for competent and ethical performance for educators. I can't think of a more important job in terms of maintaining the quality of Oregon educators and assuring that only high-quality folks go into the classroom in schools and work with students. We operate on the basis of complaints and reports from school administrators regarding violation of standards, and complaints from other folks regarding potential unethical behavior. We investigate those complaints. We can then move to sanction the educator in some way if the evidence supports the charges. And the final area is to adopt standards and actively approve educator preparation programs. So that would be programs for all of the areas for which we provide licensure.
Madam Chair? Senator Gordley.
Thank you very much, and thank you for being with us this morning. I have several questions that I'd like to explore with you around the issue of competence and quality of our teaching and administrative professionals in Oregon schools. It can be argued that, let me back up. The demographics of our state have changed dramatically. We have known for some 20 years that the demographics of our state were going to change dramatically. But it appears that the Oregon professional educational establishment has been slow to respond to the needs, the multicultural needs in today's classrooms. By slow, I mean has not really been aggressive in pursuing multicultural competence for teachers and administrators. And by slow and not being aggressive, I mean it does not appear to me that our professional educational organizations have been leading the effort to achieve multicultural competence. And when I say professional educational organizations, I'm speaking of the Oregon Education Association, the Organization of School Administrators, the Oregon School Boards Association, our schools of education, private, public. And I do want to acknowledge that there is good work going forward now, but this work has really been slow to start. and even slower to catch on. And with that being the fact, a lot of our children are not being served as well as they might be in today's classrooms, meaning that we don't have enough multiculturally competent teachers, and I just don't get a sense that there's a, or you tell me, where is there a sense of urgency around making sure that we are producing teachers and administrators who are multiculturally competent and able and ready to meet the needs of today's students and classrooms. I guess I'm asking a lot of questions, and I'm asking for where are we, and I'm also asking why is there not a greater sense of urgency.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Vicki Chamberlain, I've had a very brief conversation with Senator Gordley. I'd like to tell you a little bit about that and respond to her questions and concerns. I think it is honest and safe to say that in the past 2 years, because I know this conversation came up in our budget hearings in 2001, that there has not been an aggressive pursuit to handle the cultural competence issue in our agency. The things that I have learned even since I talked to Senator Gordley and looked up is that after last session, apparently the commission did have a presentation about what a couple of the teacher education preparation programs were doing with regard to multicultural competency. And at that time, Northwest Christian College had integrated multicultural competency into every single one of their academic classes. Entire staff has left that institution, and they are now in a transition, so I don't know what will remain of that issue. That is part of the work we do, actually, at our meeting, which I can get to later. For me personally, I have a sense of urgency and with regard to this issue, and the actions that have happened since I came on board is that all of the standards for administrators are currently being looked at to be rewritten for the licensure area. And I insisted that they consider what they would put into there for multicultural competency. And the conversation has to involve the dialogue of what are we doing as administrators to make our schools receptive for multicultural people, not only the students, but teachers? So it isn't about knowing about diversity. It's about what are we doing to change the cultures of our schools to be less hostile. And that goes to the retention issue for any underrepresented folks that we hire. That's the first hurdle. So that becomes part of our education process. Right now, with the PERS situation and the looming retirements, we have an opportunity to hire numbers of diverse administrators. And if we don't take advantage of that, we're going to miss the window. Because if they're primarily, as we've done in the past, majority population administrators, they will fill those holes for another 15 years before there's another retirement wave. And so there are people in the Valley, at least in the administrative ranks, who are aware of that. The commission this last fall also decided that there is a definite need to relook at the standards for teacher preparation. And so these are opportunities that where we need to look at how cultural competence works into our evaluation of our teacher education programs. It's a small piece, I think. David Mighton tried to explain that with the committee last time, but it is not a well-represented piece among the standards for the teacher education approval, to be perfectly honest with you. So those are the opportunities that we have. And then the final thing that I would say is that late in the 60s and early in the 70s, the legislature passed a statute that said that all teachers had to be competent in civil rights laws and discrimination laws. And I think there was a general belief that if I went to a workshop on discrimination that I would then become culturally competent. So I think that mandate for our teachers misses the mark. So what I suggested to Senator Gordley as a possibility is maybe there's a piece of that we keep, but also if we're testing already to see what people's knowledge is of civil rights laws, why not go a step further and work in a cultural competency piece? So that means to get a new license in Oregon, you have to demonstrate some level of understanding and knowledge in that area. We wouldn't be the first state to do it, but we would certainly be in the top 10 of states to do it.
And Senator Gordon? Thank you, Madam Chair. If you were to put the effort that you describe on a timeline, how quickly could we achieve establishing the standard?
For teacher preparation programs or any of them?
For teacher preparation programs, but also in terms of the TSPC establishing a new standard. Are you saying that could be accomplished by administrative rule? Would it require legislation? How quickly can we start on the path of raising the standard is what I mean.
It does not require a statute. I think it is bolstered by statute, but it's not required. The statute isn't specific about any of the other standards that we set for the teacher education program. So what it would entail would be bringing folks in to educate the commission so that they have the background to make the decision about to what depth the standard needs to go. And since we meet five times a year, I would say that it would be aggressive for us to get that done within a year. Bring the policy people in to advise the commission, prepare the commission, have administrative hearings because it would be a rule change, solicit the input, and then adopt the final rule. So if we're in March, we might possibly be able to get it done by January on a very aggressive timeline.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'd like to ask Ms. Evenson-Brady if you have comments in this area, and what are your thoughts about the possible timeline that Ms. Chamberlain has laid out?
It seems to me that that's a Pat Evenson-Brady. It seems to me that that's a realistic timeline, and it is an interest of the commissioners. I believe that we would find support for such a change. Senator Gordley, I also wanted to just speak to you from my perspective from the field because, as you know, managing and changing what happens in teacher education programs is a slower method of changing what happens in the field. I worked for Hood River County School District beginning in about 1988, and in the time that I was part of that district, the population of Spanish first language students increased from about 10% to about 40%. And so as a district, we recognized that, and we used a lot of in-service time in training teachers, not only in cultural competence, what does it mean to work with folks from a different culture. Largely, the folks in Hood River are resident. The children are citizens. They largely speak Spanish at home. They come from rural areas. Those are all cultural pieces that we need to understand as educators. So we spend a lot of energy in doing that sort of in-service in the district. That's not reflected in TSPC. It isn't even reflected in relicensure, but I've seen a similar effort elsewhere. The second piece of that is specifically, how do you teach second language learners? How do you teach reading effectively? How do you teach math effectively? And those are very teachable techniques, and again, the districts that I've been a part of have done that. The January in-service, January 03 in-service for my ESD was on working with folks from different cultures. So this is I believe that this is an important issue that is being dealt with in the field as well as at TSPC. We now require continuing professional development units to renew licensure. They have to be in one of six specified domains, and one of those is diversity, so that districts have a way to encourage current licensed educators to include that sort of professional development in their plan. So that's another way that we encourage our already prepared and licensed and practicing educators, teachers and administrators, counselors, and school psychologists to continue to expand their own knowledge of this area. So I would contribute that there's some things going on in the field in addition to the TSPC role with regard to licensure and preparation.
Madam Chair, just to conclude, and I appreciate so much hearing your response, which reflects a very strong commitment to raise the standard. And that is absolutely what is required if we're going to better serve today's students. And so I want to acknowledge that. But I also want to acknowledge that I'm hearing that this is something that can be achieved by administrative rule and could have been achieved by administrative rule some time ago. That did not happen. And so, Madam Chair, I want to request or just put on record that it would be my expectation that we see a budget note or some statement of expectations that says the TSPC will move forward with an administrative rule that addresses the issues around achieving multicultural competence for teachers and administrators and all of those who are covered by the statute.
If I might interject, Senator Gorley, mm-hmm. I would be very interested in pursuing that, and I would urge you very strongly to work on some reasonable way to word that mm-hmm. to kind of meld in your expectations and your vision with the functioning of the commission and to bring that into LFO, because as you know, we have to pre-clear all the budget notes with the co-chairs, and I feel very strongly at the way that you do, and we have had this conversation privately, that there are areas that go beyond the racial boundaries of the culture discussion. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in the area of the state that I come from, the issue is not so much race. The issue is poverty.
Yes.
And the attitude of mm-hmm. the education system to children in poverty. Mm-hmm. And so that is that's an area that I'm very interested in pursuing. Were you...
I appreciate very much the support of the chair on this issue. I will say also for the record that I have prepared legislation that addresses this issue, but short of moving that legislation forward, hearing that this is something that can be achieved by administrative rule, we need to do that. And I am not one who wants to dictate what the standard should be. I think that Oregon is blessed to have a state full of wonderful professionals working in a number of capacities in the educational community who are well equipped to describe and define what the standard should be. The problem is we haven't done it, mm-hmm. and we need to do it, and we need to do it quickly again so that Oregon's children benefit from having multiculturally competent teachers and administrators working with them.
I concur,
and
I'd be very happy to help that be.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This offers, Senator Gorley offered a segue for me to further expand on this issue. I'm not sure that your education requirements for continuing ed are doing the job on diversity. I think that the TSPC has put a lot of continuing education burdens on our teachers. I have also drafted a bill that looks at the education requirements of teachers. through administrative rule, now in Oregon, a teacher must have a master's degree in order to teach. That is extremely expensive in the state. Now, if we want to talk about multiculturalism in our school districts, and we want to talk about poverty and having teachers relate to those students in those areas, we need to make it accessible for our Hispanic populations to become teachers. Now, in my district, yes, there's a certain amount of poverty level, but there's a huge growing Hispanic level. And wouldn't it be wonderful if we could hire Hispanic teachers? And my daughter's friend's mother is currently going to school. She wants to be a teacher. She speaks Spanish, and she speaks English. And what a huge bonus that would be in a classroom of Hispanic students to have that Senator Gordley, I'm looking for a word here, to have that sameness or that comfort level for, what's it called?
Role model.
Role model, there you go. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that our educational standards in this state are reflective of the student population that's coming up. And I have a lot of trouble with that. And we also talk about that we don't have enough math teachers, or we don't have enough science teachers. Well, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, and somebody may cut it off, and I could fall, but we have mathematicians in this state, and we have scientists in this state who are qualified. Not all may be qualified to relate to children. However, I do think that we have mathematicians and scientists in this state who do relate to children, who could come in and teach a class and get a kid excited about math and get a kid excited about how to look at science and discovery and all these things that are going on. Space, for instance, you know, the shuttle accident. Well, if we had a qualified teacher, a scientist in our school who could talk about the shuttle accident and how that really is very rare and we need to continue our space exploration. Whether you're a space fan or not, I'm just using that as an example. Okay? To me, that's where I get excited about what the TSPC can do. I would like to see some areas along those lines. I have a bill, and Ms. Chamberlain, you're familiar with my bill, that talks about, let's take a look at our teacher standards. And like you say, there are no teacher standards in statutes yet, but I think some are coming, and it's something that I could work with Senator Gordley on passing across, because I have so many of my friends in the Hispanic area that have come to Oregon because of the job situation. And we talk about poor job situations, but there are job situations that are in our natural resource areas that are highly sought after from a certain segment of our society. And, you know, they have come and raised their families in my area, and they come and they even work on my farms, and so we need an outreach in that area to relay. And I don't think the TSPC in the past has been responsive to all of these different pressures that are coming up through the children in our society. So that's just what I'm saying.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if you will allow me. Tomorrow, what I'd like to bring to you is a little bit of the history of how some of the master's degree conversation came about in terms of program design and what happened through the 80s and 90s. There's a little bit of historical things that aren't related to TSPC at all, a little, and more information about how the master's degree issue arose. I know that the Education Committee this afternoon wants to talk about that too, but I'd also like to bring the documentation about that and also find the report on shortages in supply and demand and what we discovered about in the math and science area. Anecdotally, it appears that industry can pay a lot more than school districts and that these people are being scooped up into pretty high-paying jobs, and so that's one factor. In the challenges later on in the budget, you'll see that we have other multicultural barriers that happen way before the master's degree that we have as part of the issues on our plate we feel like we need to deal with.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I look forward to that tomorrow.
Thanks.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This has been an interesting discussion. I think we're all learning a lot through the process. The question I have is in relation to your benchmarks and your goals and the report as to the complaints you've had and the sanctions you've administered. And I'm having a little trouble. I'm sure I guess what I'm asking, maybe our staff can clarify, or maybe we just simply need more information tomorrow. The only reference I can see to sanctions or complaints is in your presentation of this book towards the last, and it only applied from 1998 through December of 2002. Madam Chairman, I'd like to see a further breakdown of that as to how those, and I'm not sure if these were all just complaints based on standards or exactly what this document here tells us, but I'd like to see a breakdown of not only what categories of issues you dealt with, broken down on a per-year basis and go back as 10 years or whatever so we can see a pattern. And also, as we've seen in other presentations the last couple of weeks, a breakdown of the how that was handled or what was done about those complaints, what was the action taken.
If I might, Senator Meserle, I'm looking also in this book here, and in the, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4 pages in from the back of the book, there appears to be a breakdown on the sanctions that were put out.
And I'm looking at that same thing.
Was there more information in addition to this that would be helpful to you?
I think so. You know, we've seen the breakdowns with the graphs and spread out, and I'm not able to find it in the book.
Ms. McGlashan, could you bring this additional information to our attention?
Madam Chair, it actually it's not in your notebooks, but it's in mine.
Oh, okay.
But it is something that's on the Internet, and I think Vicki can speak more about this. I think they can get you more detail on the in addition to the list that's in your presentation document.
Madam Chair, are you speaking of the annual release of the disciplines? Is that what you have in your hands? I guess I don't. If you can just...
The one that they're looking at right now.
Oh, I know what they're looking at, what you had on the Internet.
The one that I've got is off your website, which has the list of teachers and administrators subject to discipline, and this one's for 2001, and it actually lists by educator name.
Right, right,
yeah.
Right. Okay, I know.
Senator Meserle?
Follow up, thank you. We've seen the format that we've been following in many of our other presentations. And my guess is that you have the information. It's just on a different format, so it's harder for us to compare. And if we could maybe you could put it together in a different form, which I think staff can probably show you to get the format.
So perhaps if Ms. Chamberlain met with Ms. McGlashan and looked at some of the way the information was formatted in other presentations, that would meet your needs?
I think it would be very helpful, yes.
Follow up.
Madam Chairman, I'm also curious as to the requirements of administration. It's been a while since I've served on school board, but I did serve for 14 years, and I would think it would be even more pertinent now. I raised the question one time when we were doing a superintendent search that maybe what we needed was a business manager more than an education background. And I know Portland schools, I've understood it's on a temporary basis, but have gone that direction. And not that you don't need that kind of expertise, educational expertise, curriculum and things in the school, but you can hire that at different levels. And particularly with the financial crises that we're all facing and budgeting, is that allowed in Oregon right now to have superintendents, or is that just a temporary situation in Portland, who have business administration backgrounds as opposed to education backgrounds?
Madam Chair, Senator Meserle, the administrative rules allow for a superintendent's license under what's called an exceptional superintendent's license for people who have a tremendous amount of education and a background like the business background that allows districts to get a superintendent's license for situations like Portland Public Schools. It's my understanding it's been given out less than a dozen times in the last 20 years, probably mostly because it hasn't been frequently requested more than anything. But I do want to tell you that part of the look of the administrative standards, an issue that I put out there, is that in the past TSPC has required, in order for somebody to become an administrator, that they have to have had 3 years of experience on an educator's license. So that does And the further requirement had been is that they had to have had that 3 years of experience before they could enter an administrative preparation program. And the question that I have asked COSA and the administrative preparation program folks is that yes, that may be important, but you know, it is a barrier for people who may have administrative drives who want to go through, and we need to have a policy discussion about the role that that 3 years of experience plays. And so that's in this, when I mentioned the look at the administrator standards before, that's an issue that I put out there because I do think it's a barrier in some regards. And so, but we haven't had the discussion that how valuable is that past education experience for a superintendent. So, and I apparently follow-up. Superintendent Brady would like to say something.
If she has more remarks, I do have a follow-up later. But if you had, did you ever?
Might I just reflect on my own preparation as an administrator, Pat Evenson Brady? I needed to take something like 27 hours of administration. Of those, one course dealt specifically with teaching, curriculum, and instruction. All of the rest were around budget, facilities, personnel law, negotiations. So that was my own preparation at the University of Washington and at the University of Oregon. I believe that's fairly characteristic. So I think the recognition is that when you move to a superintendent's job, you're in fact becoming the CEO, and that the skills that you need are clearly since you come from an education background based on our current licensure, that the skills that you need will be other than those skills that you've developed as a teacher and as a building administrator.
Madam Chair, if I could follow up at this point.
Follow up.
Thank you. And again, this has been a little while since I served on the school board, but I've had difficulty, our boards did, in hiring in some cases because of the requirements from out-of-state superintendents. Have we developed acceptance of other states' requirements so that it's easier for some superintendents from other states to come and function as superintendents in Oregon? One of the burdens we had was that even though they were very highly recommended, highly skilled superintendents, they still had to go through a very lengthy process, at least at that time, in Oregon to become Oregon superintendents.
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, it's my impression that the new licensure system that TSBC adopted in 1999 is more friendly to out-of-state candidates, both teaching and administrator, but I do think we have work to do there. For example, I almost feel like I'm hanging out our dirty laundry, but the it doesn't make any sense to me that we would require a 15-year former administrator to take a basic skills test, which is something we do, and obviously it's not a difficult thing for them to pass, but, really, what does it prove? It was intended for the accountability for new teachers when the test was implemented and has been just uniformly applied to everybody who came in. The other thing that administrators have to take when they come in from out of state or whether they're in state is a praxis test for administrative capabilities. And 98.5% of the people who take that test pass the test. Now, recently we did have a doctoral candidate who had no education background who had to take it twice. However, he did say it ended up being helpful to him because it showed him the education pieces that he felt that he was deficient in that he did need to run the district. So, in answer to your question, that's another thing that's out there in the administrative licensure review is the long path that TSBC has crafted for out-of-state people. I think it's a fair question to ask and a fair thing that we have to look at it.
So is there any discussions or movement of any form nationwide of states getting together and have a national certification or even some states moving in that direction to accept other both for teachers and administrators?
Madam Chair, Senator Messler early, not necessarily. There are national standards for teachers. The reciprocity issue, I would venture, is identical in almost every state. People who go to Washington have similar problems. You're initially given a provisional license, and then you have to jump through the hoops to get the permanent license. I'd like to fix that with Washington, frankly, and have better reciprocity. We have reciprocity agreements, and really what they mean is that if you went to a teacher education program in another state, we'll accept that.
But don't, just an interjection.
Senator Messley?
No, I'm fine.
But,
Representative Smith.
Thank you. Bear with me, but those reciprocity agreements, if they don't have a master's degree, they can't teach in Oregon.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that's correct. The reciprocity agreement says that if I have gone to a teacher education program, let's say in Arizona, that will suffice. We won't look at that again and ask you to retake courses in teacher education or anything like that. The master's degree today is required for the permanent license, and had been required for all people who wanted to continue to teach in high school since the 60s.
Mm-hmm. So it's to me, so, in my mind, I look at that and I'd say, well, that's not true reciprocity if within 3 years you grant them a, you understand where you're coming from? And that's why I was looking at the education requirements in my particular piece of legislation.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the answer to both your questions is that that was my point, is that all of the states operate independently around their requirements, and almost all of the states look askance at someone who's been prepared other than in their state. Mm-hmm. And all the other states require some folks to run through. The master's degree requirement is not a... You can come into the state and teach for 9 years before you're required to get a master's degree if you're an out-of-state teacher today. But we can talk about that in the morning, too.
And Representative Smith, I hesitate to get into a protracted discussion here because Representative Bates has been...
I beg your pardon, sir. Go ahead. We'll discuss that further later.
Thank you.
Which may not be as pertinent as her points. But I just came off a school board 10 years, and... So take my comments under that understanding that there were some, at times, significant difficulty between my school district and your organization. And so it's a lot of my information is anecdotal. It may not be real, but I want to share some information with you. Quite frankly, we found your organization difficult to get through to on a phone call, difficult to get through on a voicemail. Calmly unresponsive to what our questions were about specific teachers, and slow to move and slow to action unless actually pushed very, very hard to take any action. I think of difficulties with the accreditation of people who are well-trained in their field, ready to teach, and have to go through a bunch of hoops to get an accreditation if they don't happen to have gone through a teaching program. I found some of those people that did get into our school system to be the best teachers we had because they brought educational experiences outside the education system.
Absolutely.
I find the education system is full of a bureaucracy. It has put all kinds of standards in place, well-meaning standards in place, but which have no realism to them. People going through all those hoops are not their teachers because of it. It's just hoops they go through. The difficulty of attaining a license in the state of Oregon compared to other states is significant. I've heard that from multiple teachers. You can get a license in California a lot easier than you can in Oregon and get paid better. I'm concerned about criminal updates and whether you're doing those on a regular basis and whether you can do it as you come in. And I have an overarching question for you, which is, I think, the real question here. You're supervising 60,000 teachers. It's a huge number. There's 21 of you. If my figures are correct, you're looking at disciplinary action in a fraction of 1% of those 60,000 people. It either tells me you've got 60,000 angels out there working for you, or you're missing your mission. And you're missing your mission because you don't have the resources to take care of it. You don't have enough people on the phones. You haven't got enough people on the voicemails. You haven't got enough investigators. You just can't do your job when you're underfunded and underhanded of this nature. Board of Medical Examiners, I believe, has a budget of about $6 million. They're supervising 5,000 physicians. You're supervising 60,000 teachers with 21 people and a budget of $4 or $5 million. Can you accomplish your mission under those conditions? That's my question for you. I don't want an answer now. I want you to think about that and come back to it. I want you to think outside the box, big picture. Are you really getting your job done? And can you get your job done with this kind of a workforce?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I'm not going to give you an answer, but you do give me a segue into some meaty budget issues. So I want to give you some background before we come back, just so that you know. I'm going to start with the discipline issues. I think you ask a valid question. There isn't any statutory authority for us to go farther than we do right now with disciplines. So we would have to look at what that authority is in terms of policing things out in districts, just as an FYI. One of our budget requests is an additional investigator because I listened to the chiropractors the other day. They had a full-time investigator who investigated 8 cases. We investigate over 200 complaints a year and have right now over 100 active cases. The statute requires that we investigate every complaint. Some things that we've implemented since I began to help with your issue, because I had a terrible concern, is we do not issue a license until the LEDS check has cleared. We used to provisionally enter them, and then we had to go through the hoops of doing something if we discovered something. We do multiple batch LEDS checks now to stay ahead of that game. So every time a teacher comes in for a renewal, they do get checked. A bill that we support that we don't have is one the state police have that will allow us to become part of a network with FBI information, because if a teacher leaves Oregon and commits a crime in another state, even though they stay here, we wouldn't have any way of knowing that through our ways of doing background checks today. That is fairly rare. Just as a side note, Senator Messerly, the records that we have for discipline that I can put my hands on immediately go back to late 1997, and they weren't well kept, and they weren't correlated, they weren't organized in the way that you want to be, and they're in archives right now. And so I can do what you want to do from 98 on and show you what the disciplines have been. That's the one piece. On the service piece, which is also budget-related for us, we have, I discovered when I came on board this past fall that we only answered the phones from 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock, and I don't know why that was. So as of the 1st of October, we answer the phones from 7:30 to 5:30. We discovered they really don't start ringing before that, and they don't ring after that. So we have them now split shift covered. It's worked out really, really well in a lot of regards, because I used to teach, and the only time I could get to the phone was before school and after school, and I actually heard Representative Smith say that on the budget record last time. So we changed that in October, and then I continued to get these little notes that somebody would get a busy signal when they called in. We did get a couple more phone lines in, which I asked for in July, and we got this past fall, but I asked, why don't we have voicemail? Why do you have to call in and get a busy signal? And so on January 6th, we did put in a voicemail system. 386 phone calls have gone into that voicemail system in the last 6 weeks. That's how many busy signals we would not have known those people were trying to contact us. And so another piece of our budget request is another personal service representative to help us handle the phone and the email questions that we get. So I think those are real legitimate issues. And then finally, this last April, on our website, anybody from the public can log on and look up any individual teacher and find out what they are licensed to teach. And that's going to help us with some of the No Child Left Behind requirements. But Representative Bates' concern about access to information about individual teachers, it's virtually all public.
Madam Chair. No. Let me see if Senator Messerly is finished. Certainly.
No, Madam Chair, I do have a question. But you just brought up an additional question. And the first question would be then, the individual information, does it include any kind of complaints or actions that have been taken against those teachers? Is that also on the web, or is that confidential information that's available?
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, on the website for that information for the teacher, you would not find a discipline action. However, once a discipline action has been taken by the commission, it is public record. And what we have done is, because the statute requires us to, and it's not a bad thing, is annually publish the list that's similar to the one that Ms. McGlashan has, and of all the educators that have been reprimanded, suspended, or revoked. It does not come up on the web page whether that person has been revoked or suspended or disciplined.
I'm sure I have a question today. Was asking for a follow-up. Is that it seems to me that with the PERS situation we have now and the number of teachers that are retiring and the projected shortages of teachers, that there's a tremendous need to deal with some of these issues of the requirements and acknowledging other states' programs and quite urgently, because it would seem to me that we're facing some severe shortages and difficulties in hiring enough staff, if not right now, for sure in the next year or two. And I think it's going to get worse as we go for the next probably 5 or 10 years. So I guess my question would be, what kind of a, you mentioned some of the things that you're trying to do and your commission is trying to address. What kind of a time frame are you on? Are we going to be able to get ahead of this fall, or are you going to find more and more difficulty reaching the needs of school districts trying to hire people?
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, I'm trying to sort that question out in my head a little bit here. The personal service, I think we are getting on top of and will be enhanced if we're able to hire the staff that we've requested. So we could get ahead and stay on top of that issue. And that includes the data information that folks are requesting online. You had another big piece.
I was really referring to the applicants being certified to be able to...
Oh, yes, the shortage issue. That's an interesting, actually, area to go into, and I can bring more information tomorrow. There are 65,000 active licensees in this state. There are only 32,000 of them employed in the public schools, and of that, about 26,000 of them are teachers. The rest are personnel and school nurses, psychologists, and administrators. So that means that we have about 25,000 licensed people out there who may or may not be substituting or may not want to teach, but they keep their license active for a reason. So one of the things that we've proven research is that Oregon doesn't have an educator shortage right now, except in the areas like Representative Smith pointed out, special ed, math. I think it's perennial, and I think it's nationwide. I think every state has shortages in those areas. So that doesn't mean it couldn't happen. That doesn't mean that in a few years. And the unknown for us, and I think that the piece that may be impossible to know quickly is of how many of those folks who aren't now working would be working. I do know that we had over 1,000 people lose jobs, licensed people lose jobs this academic year, and I think they're projected about another 1,500 will lose jobs next year, which will put those 2,500 out there into our unemployed list. We're licensing in the neighborhood of about 6,500 new licensees a year. So of those, 60% of those folks are coming from out of state. 40% of them are being prepared in Oregon. So I'm not sure what we're supposed to do right now. I mean, we're trying to continue to collect the data so we can spot where we're going to have problems. But it's difficult for a commission to recruit into fields, I believe. You know, this is something that really goes into the hands of the higher ed institutions, and maybe even before that, encouraging young high school students to head in the direction of education or programs like that.
Two comments, Madam Chair. I'm struck by the fact that only half of your licensures or less than half of them are active teachers. And it would be interesting to see the breakdown as to why those folks are not active. Some of them, I would assume, want to be part-time teachers or whatever, and some of them might just have retired and just for their professional comfort level want to maintain a license. But that seems to me a huge number of people that are not active licenses. And I guess you spoke to it very well, the 60% that come from out of state. I think that's my concern, and I sense the rest of some of the committee, that do we have undue burdens in bringing those out-of-state people into the workforce?
Which is something we definitely need to look at. I think the issue that I don't have my arms around, and I'm not quite sure how to get it, is to my knowledge, there aren't any jobs available in education right now. So for the folks who don't have jobs, which is a crisis that we have with our newly licensed teachers who need experience, because as you know, in most situations, the youngest and the least senior are the first to go, and this is an issue we're trying to address in our licensure bill this afternoon and affects all the issues that you've raised this morning.
Thank you.
If I might, Senator Gordley is very patiently waiting in line here, but the what I'm hearing about the commission's ability to deal with what you're calling, I think, discipline concerns that are brought forward is something that I want to kind of try to clarify what we're asking for here, because I think that what we need in order to make some kind of a judgment about how well you're functioning in that area is information relating to not only what you're doing with the complaints, but the number of complaints you're receiving and the time that's involved in processing the complaints, and then what the result is, what you're coming out with. Are you dismissing them? Are you sanctioning them? How do the numbers fall in the different ways that you're dealing with them? So I think what we're after here is not just the outcomes of the investigation process. We're interested in the continuum of the process, right from the number of complaints and the nature of the complaints that you're receiving, the time that you're processing them, and how you're dispensing with them. So that would be the breadth of the information that I would look for you to bring back to us, so that we can try to get our hands around whether you have what you need to be able to do that part of your mission.
Madam Chair, I can do that easily from 1998. The number of complaints and numbers of dismissals, lack of foundation, et cetera. Everything that's happened with every complaint since then.
Thank you. Senator Gordon, thank you for being so patient.
No problem, Madam Chair, and thank you. Ms. Chamberlain, at the point of granting a teaching license, what evidence has been reviewed that tells you that a person can successfully teach reading, can successfully teach math? Again, I'm asking about evidence and a demonstration of ability, capacity to teach those subjects successfully.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, the new licensure system is designed like this, and is so new that we have less than 200 people with permanent license in this area, just to give you a little bit of scope. I would come out of my teacher education program as a new teacher under this licensure design, and I would then spend the next 6 years teaching and getting my experience in the classroom. In order to proceed to the next stage of licensure, which is becoming more common in every state, then I would have to prove to a higher ed institution or an approved program that I can teach my subject matter. So the change from the old system is it used to be, let's say if I were a French teacher, that I would go out and I would get my bachelor's in French in education, I'd get my master's in French, and if I was going to teach more French, I would personally acquire more French, and that would allow me to move up the licensure scale. now we're saying that we think that if you have a bachelor's degree and a master's degree, you have plenty of French. To get a permanent license, you have to show someone that you can teach your class French. And that is really what the continuing license is, that the teachers can prove the advanced competencies in the areas in which they're teaching. And so that means that there has to be a lot of classroom observation and there has to be measurable learning goals from their students. It is brand new. So, and it is labor intensive, and it is also showing very good results in the classroom.
Madam Chair, follow up. Do these new requirements then put us in alignment with the requirements in No Child Left Behind, or are there additional requirements or standards that we need to be looking at? And again, with an eye towards specifically reading and math, because that's a heavy focus of the No Child Left Behind efforts. We have these thousands and thousands and thousands of low-income and students of color who are not achieving in reading and math. And so are we raising our bar high enough to get where we need to go?
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, the No Child Left Behind requirements are, in my personal opinion, below the advanced competency requirements of our other license, because nothing in No Child Left Behind requires a state to do something proactive to make sure their teachers can teach. What No Child Left Behind is, it defines what the state needs to look at for competency. So if I'm an elementary teacher, the state needs to have a test that shows that I am competent through the testing in math or reading. Mm-hmm. So the next step we would have them do is show a higher ed institution or whoever is running a program that I could teach math and reading. That would be the Oregon addition to No Child Left Behind requirements. So we are pretty good on the testing front for No Child Left Behind. Most of our teachers would be highly qualified under the federal requirement. But we would be rolling back our license today if we took solely the No Child Left Behind standards.
Okay. Thank you. It's very helpful information. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to drop back to what the chairman asked a few chairwoman. Chairperson, whatever is politically correct today.
The
chair asked.
The chair being.
The supreme one, okay? In considering the load you have to do and considering the concerns about carefully disciplining without overreaching, I would ask you to consider this for a question for tomorrow too. If you were actively to go out in the teaching community and in the parent community and ask for concerns people have about individual teachers or schools, and people knew you existed, which most people don't, and most parents don't, what would be the effect as far as complaints coming in, and how would you handle those? And I say that from the position that the vast majority of teachers do an excellent job. They do the very best they can to the conditions that prevail of overcrowded classrooms, kids not prepared for school, all the things we know about. But I still believe there's a segment there who need help and are not being identified. And it's difficult to identify them. It's difficult getting action on them. And to open that up, as we have medicine, so people can anonymously call in to the Board of Medical Examiners and bring questions about individuals, has been helpful to our profession to make us better.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, a clarification. The statutes and the administrative rules pretty much keep their eye on disciplinary issues that rise to a level of a reportable event. I'm a member of the bar also, and so the malpractice level and thresholds fairly well defined there, and I think in teaching it is too. And I'm saying that to say this, is that the TSPC does not reach too far into classroom management or teacher competency once the district's hired them. What we do is if there is a problem with the teacher's relationship with the students or their colleagues, or they have broken a law or they have violated ethics, then it becomes a licensure issue. So for clarification's sake, and I will tell you also that we do not process anonymous complaints, and that is not in the statute. And we don't receive many anonymous complaints, and that may be because you're maybe right, people don't know about us. But parent, we do receive many parent complaints. So help me understand here where you want me to look.
Madam Chair, I would hazard a guess that the vast majority of parents did not know you exist. And parents are directed to go with the teacher, the principal, superintendent with their complaints first, which is appropriate. Most of them don't know where to go after that other than the school board. Many of them, I think, might want to come directly to you. Some of these complaints are serious. And our school district had some serious complaints that went on for years unanswered and ended up with criminal investigations and incarceration. Okay. What I'm saying is, you look, stand back and look at the big picture. Mm-hmm. Look what your mission is. Are you accomplishing your mission? If you are, then your mission is much smaller in scope than I recognize it to be. If your mission is what it says it is, to ensure that that kids in this state have compassionate and education and are well educated, if that's really your mission, then I think you need to look at your scope a little more carefully.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, one thing that does go toward, I think, the direction that you're heading is that superintendents and administrators are required to report events that may result in a licensure sanction, and there is a serious sanction for administrators who do not. So when we, and we occasionally do get the complaints that shows clear evidence that it has been going on for a long time, it hasn't ever been reported to the commission, the administrator should not escape also being sanctioned. I don't think that helps you necessarily, but I do know that we do have that. I'm going to have to think a little bit about the scope issue, because I would submit that you're correct. It's not as big as you'd like it to be.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
If I could add to the request that I asked you to bring forward information on the complaints and the dispensation of the complaints, I thought I heard you say that within the last 30 days you changed the, you've added voicemail and expanded the hours that you talk to the public. Would it be possible to do an analysis of the calls that you've received during that time and tell us how many, what percentage of them were related to complaints? And what I'm trying to get at here is, does the increase in access give you an even bigger issue in the volume of complaints that you're trying to have to process?
Madam Chair, I can actually answer that without doing any research. As I was trying to indicate to Representative Bates, complaints that go to the discipline part of our mission and what we do come in specifically to one person, and then we require that they fill out a formal complaint form to start our discipline process. That's been the procedure. The other complaints that may come in with regard to lack of information or something relative to licensure or the belief that we've misinformed them or something like that would come in through the phone calls or the emails and that sort of thing. So which are really quite different than somebody complaining about whether or not an educator has committed an infraction. Very few, occasionally those phone calls go to the front desk, but they don't keep track of them because they're not trained or authorized to deal with them. They are sent back to the discipline areas. So
I guess I'm a little bit foggy here. If I was one of those concerned parents, members that Representative Bates is talking about, and I have an issue with what happened between a teacher and my child, mm-hmm. and I call you up and I tell you about it, mm-hmm. what happens?
The my executive assistant who supervises the disciplinary procedural things would take your name, take your number, get your address, send you a complaint form, and ask you to fill out specifically in writing what it is you believe the educator has done. It would come back to our office, and it would be immediately assigned to an investigator because the statute requires that we investigate every complaint. The commission at some point determined that every complaint had to be a signed complaint, had to be a somebody who was willing to say they were making the complaint. So it then goes into the investigator's files and would get in line behind the other complaints. We receive in the discipline area in the neighborhood of 3 to 5 complaints a week, just to give you an idea of the scope. We receive them in a variety of ways. Sometimes we get them through a governor's email. Sometimes we get them through our contact website email. Sometimes we get them by the phone. Sometimes, most often, we get them by letter. Patron complaints are the tiniest percentage of the folks who complain. The majority of our complaints are coming from the HR staff and the superintendents and the districts. They are becoming much more aware and informed, in my impression. So I think I think it used to be thought that the districts should handle these issues, and issues that used to remain exclusively in the district are now coming our way, and I think that's what's contributing to our growing caseload for discipline issues. And not that that's a bad thing. I think it's a society change.
I would be very interested in trying to have the committee understand the challenges that you face there in dealing with the call complaints that you get, and I'm real interested in timeliness, and I'm also very interested in how you dispense with them, how many of them get dismissed, and just kind of get a picture mm-hmm. of how this flows through.
Okay.
Senator Masery.
I think you might have answered part of my question, but I have to say first that I'm getting the sense that we're really putting a lot of burden on your department, but I think we're asking,
okay.
We're asking good questions. I'm comfortable with it, and I think maybe we're hopefully in the end will be helpful to you. But the question I had was what percentage or where these complaints come from, and I think you answered part of that. My concern is that I believe there's some school districts who really won't act on a complaint until they force the parent or whoever in the community to write out a formal complaint and go through the whole process. And one of my frustrations when I served on the school board was, you know, the boards and the school district has a tremendous responsibility, too, to follow up on a phone call and to decide whether it is a valid complaint and act on it, as opposed to forcing the community, who gets put in a quite awkward position oftentimes, to go through a formal complaint and the whole process and have to come in. And so I would hope that if you could provide some of that information where those complaints come from, and it sounds to me like you are seeing a much higher percent come from the school districts themselves or their staff. And I think that would be encouraging because once there's a question asked or someone asked, is there improper action here? In my way of thinking, that is a school district's responsibility to take the ball at that point and go.
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, I'm almost certain, just so that you know, and I promise I'm not whining, but in order to determine where the complaint came from in all our cases, we would have to pull every file. I'm certain it's not a piece of data that we've recorded in an organized way. But my point is that if we don't have to deliver it tomorrow, we could do it. I'm almost certain we can get it done by in the morning. So,
Senator Messerly and Madam Chair, I served as chair of the discipline committee on the discipline committee for the past 2 years. So I can give you anecdotal data. Just from looking at the cases that came through, and there were about an equal number of patron complaints and school district reporting. So, I mean, it varied from time to time, but typically the cases that we dealt with at each meeting were about evenly divided, if that is helpful information for you.
Thank you.
Well, I think committee have done the most masterful job so far of derailing an agency's presentation, and we've probably gotten you incredibly off of where you were hoping to lead us. So in the remaining few minutes, 20 minutes or so, please attempt to patch this thing back together so that we can continue down the process.
Madam Chair, member of the committee, again for the record, Vicki Chamberlain, and I guess I'll take over from now. It was at this point we were going to talk about our links, and you are so well grounded now, I'll have to do less prep, actually, truthfully. Last session, we had a statement of expectation in our budget that TSPC do this. Apparently, we hadn't done this in the past, We did, you'll find the links in your budget book at pages 19 to 24, the ones that we did.
Budget book are you?
The green one, the big one, the real one.
Okay.
Sorry, the first one. When I first started this process, TSPC did not believe that they were primarily connected to any of the Oregon benchmarks, and I did talk with the Progress Board staff, and we agreed that we are. We believe that there's enough evidence that shows that effective teachers can lead students to learning, so it doesn't make any sense that the commission, if
Ms.
our...
Chamberlain,
yeah,
I'm going to be awful and interrupt you again, because behind you are some of the people that were here to try to serve, and I just wanted to recognize them. This is a high school class from Dallas, Oregon, from Morrison campus, and their teacher is Melody Slothauer. They're here today to tour the campus, and just to give you all a little bit of context about what you're walking into, we have an agency before us called the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission that deals with licensing teachers and processing complaints and all the issues related to getting those people in front of the classrooms that you sit in and making sure that they're acting in a professional way and have the backgrounds they need to be able to teach you. So we're talking about their budgets, and we're talking about some of the issues that we have interest in knowing more about. So with that, I'll just let you continue.
You might mention this is a big opportunity to teachers.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The what I attempted to do in the benchmark was take some longstanding goals of the commission and link them up to the exercise of connecting them to high-level outcomes in the benchmarks. And so in the agency goals, you'll see that there are five goals there. And they get close to some of the issues you've raised this morning, but I can't tell you they're all exactly on point, and that's one of the things I learned in doing this. So, for example, on the first one, to maintain and enhance Oregon educator professional standards of excellence, I think the biggest impact that the commission can have is in the area that Senator Gordley was interested in, and that's the standards of the teacher preparation programs, keeping in mind that only impacts 40% of our new licensees because that's all that our colleges produce. So I struggled with the Progress Board to figure out how do you measure performance? How do you determine whether or not the colleges are doing a good job and whether or not they meet a certain amount of standards when we make a standard visit, which is part of the work we do each meeting, is approve programs and then visit them every 5 years to make sure they're on track for where they said they would be in terms of their standards. But I don't believe that it really evaluates candidate performance as they're produced by the schools. And Oregon actually took a hit for this in Education Week this time in terms of teacher quality and the values that Education Week used to measure teacher quality. And I think that's something that we have to take a look at when I said we take a look at our teacher education standards. So
has there been any attempt to link the performance of the students with the, I mean, we're getting into some fairly sophisticated testing and database information here. Has there been an attempt to link this performance measure to teacher performance in relation to the students' testing?
Not totally scientifically. I do know that there is some ongoing research going on right now through Western Oregon University's Teacher Research Center with regard to the effect that new teachers have in the classroom. But we don't have a direct link or direct research that shows that because I completed this education program and I came from this particular school, all of my students necessarily perform better. And I think part of the problem with that is just like with any other profession is that once the teacher leaves the college, it's very individual what will happen with their progress. And we do have research on that. Most teachers start to look like other teachers in their buildings. It has everything to do with the administration, the school's goals, and the culture of their schools. And so once you have exited your education piece, what happens after that is out of our hands. So it's a difficult connection to make. When I was going to law school, they measured success by bar passage rates, and that's pretty much how education preparation programs are measured, as the candidate performance when they exit. Does that make sense?
It's frustrating, but it does make sense. Senator Gordley.
There is an element of frustration here, Madam Chair. Let me, in talking about teacher education standards, we're also at the same time talking about the quality of our schools of education. Again, our public and our independent schools. Where currently is the conversation taking place? Where is the convening place that brings all of the partners to the table to focus, laser-like focus, on the issue of raising the standards and for teachers, but also making sure that there's alignment with what's coming out of the schools of education? Is that a clear question?
Yes.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'll be unable to give you a clear answer. This is because there is no focus. The where it would happen and should happen and is in our challenges and presentation to you is out in our office. So, in other words, a responsible agency would be doing ongoing alignment with what it is that the teacher education programs are teaching, what it is we're testing for licensure, and what it is that we want our students to learn in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And we did conduct an alignment study 2 years ago for about 8 of our tests. But see, it's subject specific, and No Child Left Behind even makes that more subject specific. So we believe that in the budget that we've requested that we will be able to step up the alignment work that we need to do to address your exact same issue. Because today, the only measure of competency that we have is the test. Let me explain that differently. If I went to Oregon State and I was a math major, I would complete my 4 years of math as an undergraduate with very little undergraduate education classes. I would enroll in a master's of teaching program, and then I would acquire my education classes and then be taught specific methodologies to teach math. So the only measure of how well that person might do in the classroom will be whether or not they pass our math licensure test. That's what I'm trying to say. And I think that it can be done differently.
And then, if I might, just for my own personal clarification, after they pass that math licensure test, they're out of the purview of your organization. You don't track them after that to find out if they're actually successfully completing a teaching function.
We do now under the new licensure structure. That was the whole point of the redesign, to align it more closely with what we wanted with ed reform and student performance. So, in other words, if we want students to... if we reorganize our schools so we can demonstrate that students are learning and that people who are getting diplomas aren't walking out with a wide variety of skills in education, then it was believed that we should have that kind of accountability for our teachers. So to remain permanently licensed in Oregon, you have to meet the advanced competencies to show you can teach math, and the way the statute goes today, within 6 years of graduating.
But the competencies, and again, correct me if my perceptions are not correct, the competencies are tied to passing class, increasing your education.
Madam Chair, you are precisely correct. So part of the work that we also outlined here in the budget package is that we need to adopt new competency language for all of these areas, and we have only 2 years to do that when you talk about urgency, or we will lose our partnership status with the National Accrediting Board. So, in other words, how we've measured it in the past is when I became a teacher, all I needed was a PE major. I had to have so many hours of this and so many hours of that and so many hours of that. Today, I may still have to have those hours, but I have to pass the test. But no one set any standards that say that in teaching PE you would have these skills. And that is also on our plate to do in our budget. But it can be accomplished in the alignment that Senator Gordley asked. So you would convene teachers who are now teaching in that field. Let's take reading. That is an interest of hers. We would take reading teachers, and we would take educators in the colleges who are teaching reading to teachers to teach reading. Is that terrible? And then we would have the national standards, and we would adopt competencies that align with the national standards. And so that we would go beyond the test. We would have a set of standards. So then how that would work is that when TSPC goes to the university to review their program and they look at their reading program, they would look specifically at how that college is performing in relation to those standards. That's work that had been started when I came on board but has not been aggressively pursued, and it's my goal to have it done in the next 18 months.
So, again, just to clarify, in my mind, the standards that you're talking about for competency, are they related to the progress that the teacher is able to make the students attain? Or what are these standards related to?
They're related to what the teacher education college must teach and measure for a candidate coming out of their school.
But how do you know that the standards that you're putting on the teacher education institutions reflect the needs of the students to attain the benchmarks that we've set for them?
Okay. How we would do that is the advanced competencies for our second stage license have, I'll bring those for you tomorrow. For me to get a continuing license in Oregon, I have to prove I can lead my students to learning gains in the area I am teaching. So, and how I do that is I have to be teaching in a classroom, and I have to show that I can lead every single one of my students to learning gains, which means I have to have work samples, portfolios, proof, pre-tests, post-tests, methods that I've taught, and all of this is how we are using this information in partnership with higher ed to give our advanced license. So, in other words, if you were a teacher who came out of a college and you weren't teaching, you could not get our advanced license because you wouldn't have a class of students that you could use to demonstrate that you have the abilities to lead students to learning gains.
I'm having a bit of a problem here, but go ahead, Senator Cole.
Thank you. And your further explanation is getting back to the question that I asked earlier about what evidence we're looking at in order to grant a license. So I hear you talking about the advanced license. That's one
right.
piece. But let's go back to the initial license. And again, the issue that we're raising, that I'm raising, is around what evidence do you have of demonstrated competency teaching reading or teaching math. I mean, how do you know the teacher can teach is the basic question before they get the license.
I'm going to say one thing and then let Superintendent Evenson Brady. Before you can get a license in Oregon, you have to successfully complete student teaching and a practicum in the areas that you're going to teach. You also have to successfully complete a work portfolio that shows that you can show that you can teach and that you can lead students to learning gains. This is part of your teacher preparation program. That's the first phase. Then it's up to that program to recommend the teacher. The second piece of evidence that the college has done their job is the passing of the praxis test before they get their license. Does that make sense? That's the first set of standards. So the education college is looking for can this student teach reading? Can the student teach math? Can the student teach to this age group? Can the student lead to learning gains? I'll bring those standards in. Those are the standards for the initial license that are determined by the college. And then I will bring also then, once the person is out of college, what the standards are to get their license, so that I think I could clarify it if I had them in front of me.
I would just follow up, Madam Chair, by saying that, you know, the research tells us that this the success of a given child in a classroom is directly related to the preparation of that teacher. And so I think that's why we're honing in on this, wanting to understand this piece. Because again, we know we have all of these low achieving students that our schools have failed. And so how did we get there? Well, we know how we got there, and we're trying to do this corrective course, but are we putting the pieces in place that will really allow us to do the correction, or is there something more that we should be looking at? And I think a part of my questioning is also, what is our capacity, really, to do what we've got to do to make it better for kids? Do we have the quality of leadership that is required in all of these different professional settings that play a part in moving the state forward? That's a serious question as well. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, if I might just reflect on some of my own work. I've been adjunct faculty for Portland State, and part of what I do is supervise student teachers. So I'm right at the juncture where we take the academic knowledge, which is reflected and documented on the testing portion, and we move it into the classroom. And what I do is work intensively with the student teacher and with the practicing teacher, and together we make an assessment of whether or not the student possesses enough real-life skills that can be applied in a real classroom setting on a consistent basis to begin the teaching process. So that's the piece that I think you're asking about for initial licensure. How is that verified? Mm-hmm. That's verified in an actual classroom setting, a practicum or an internship student teaching setting for some of our licenses at more than one level, and a university person and a classroom teacher, and typically also a building principal if they're available, look at and work with that teacher so that I always had the authority to say this one isn't ready.
But you know,
the classroom teacher had that same authority.
Madam Chair, and with all due respect to the work that you're doing with Portland State, and I'm sure it's good work, that's Portland State. And we have the other institutions in our public and private setting, and not all of these institutions are following the same course. We're missing, we don't have a systemic approach. That's my concern here. I'm just raising that as another overarching issue. I don't think I'm overstating where we are. And again, I keep coming back to, where is the alignment and where's the convening happening that brings all of these partners together to make sure that we are focused in a laser-like way to move ourselves forward.
We now have about 3 minutes left before we have to leave this room. I'm wondering if there's anything that you can do in 3 minutes, or would this be a good place to break?
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask where you'd like me to start tomorrow.
I would suggest for triage here that that you may want to go through your presentation and kind of cross out the things that we've covered. And we'll make every attempt to be a little more disciplined as we go at this. But I think that this is a good indication that this committee is really interested in trying to make the education part of the budget work as well as we possibly mm-hmm. can. Mm-hmm. And please bear with us as we try to kind of get a mental picture of what's going on inside your commission and how this is, what role this plays in the continuum of education that we're going to be considering as we go through all of the agencies and all of the budgets. So, again, as I told you in my office, you're actually the first real education piece that we've grappled with here. And so I think you're getting the brunt of a lot of kind of pent-up energy that's been building as we've been working through all these other boards and commissions. So bear with us, but I would hope that you would be able to kind of cull out of your presentation the things that we've substantially discussed.
Madam Chair, it occurs to me that it may be helpful to answer the questions that were raised before we get to the specifics in our budget, because I think then it adds another eye into some of our requests. So I will start with answering the questions raised today. How's that sound? And I won't be redundant in the rest of it.
And I think, too, that the committee would be more interested in getting quality information. So if we're going to require you to stay up all night and drink coffee and crunch numbers, I think we'd rather give you a little bit more time to do that so that you can give us a more thoughtful look at the situation.
I think all the information you've asked for can be done between now and tomorrow. The discipline will take more time, and it won't take that long, but if I could take that off, we can do the other stuff and
that would be very
get to the... Great.
Further questions or comments?
Your presentation and preparation are just outstanding, and I really appreciate your forthrightness in responding to our questions and issues and concerns.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your attention.
I will adjourn the Education Subcommittee, and we'll reconvene tomorrow morning at 8:30.